From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 28th day of May 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. We'll hear again an interview that I ran yesterday and recorded last week with Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, discussing the prevented planting decision farmers across the whole of the Midwest will be making this week, next week, and into the month of June, and how they should take into account the price of corn along with the MFP. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we'll do it all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Medium. Find us online, listen to us on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Well, things finally in Chicago looked out across, I guess, the United States and said, hey, wait a second. We're not sure that the corn and the soybeans are going to get planted. And I don't know if there was anything else going on or not. What did you hear?
Well, I think that the weather situation over the weekend, we didn't get much planted. You know, the weather went from bad to worse over the weekend. Most of the region, except for parts of the southern Corn Belt, Iowa, Missouri were hit particularly hard. The Illinois River is above flood stage. Over the next several days, the Mississippi is also above flood stage. And the forecast of little or any let up, as you just said in the forecast there, for the rest of this week. There is a little bit from June 6th on out that the forecast might go back to more normal, not dry, but at least just normal rains at the time period. And we did also see that the funds, we read a couple different places today that we think that they are maybe out of their short position in corn and actually going long.
Well, they would need to go long, I would think, in order for the marketplace to continue higher, relatively speaking, after they got out of the shorts, because that would just be a bounce, right?
If they didn't bother to continue to do some buying, why we'd consolidate for a while here, that's for sure. So, but I think we're going to look a lot tonight at the crop planting progress. The average guess, I think, somewhere around 63%. The estimates range from 59% to 68%. And if we're on the low end of that, I think that the we'll continue to see a rally. I think the biggest surprise for most of the traders today was that the strength in the bean market, but they'd been very slow to get out of the beans, and the funds were definitely covering shorts in the beans today.
Yeah. So what are your expectations from producers when they look at this market as it's related to old and or new crop sales, if any at all?
Well, I think that we're seeing a lot of farmers are, if they have their corn in the ground, they're willing to take and price. I know that some of our farmers priced some cash milo, some cash corn, and looked at it today and looking to scale on in for what they've got planted that way. I know that at least of their 15% that they don't have covered by insurance, they're thinking that, you know, if we can make a $4 cash sale, that isn't bad for to guarantee that 15% that we don't have covered with our insurance. And also along the way, I think that we've seen a very, very nice pop-up here. The biggest problem that we have is a lot of guys are very hesitant because they don't have a very big percentage of their corn crop planted, especially in our area here and up in northern Illinois. A lot of people have not started planting corn yet.
Yeah, so they would be hesitant. They're probably heavily weighing what this prevent plant means to them and how to incorporate MFP at all. And Gary Schnitke will have something on that in just a bit for us here on the Closing Market Report as well. What are they telling you, though, about that decision?
With the MFP, I think that basically prevent plant will not get an MFP payment, but there is a disaster bill in there that might give them the MFP payment. And as far as the prevent plant, Todd, as far as we're looking down here, everybody's still looking at trying to get in and get their planting done. They feel with the hybrids they have now, if they can get planted sometime before June 10th, that they're going to continue to try to plant corn.
Mm-hmm. And so they'll continue to plant corn. That, and all in all, that's just going to push everything back for soybean planting then.
And beans, we will probably not gain the acres we would have because there will be some prevent plant, because prevent plant and corn is going to pay just about as much as beans would, especially with the idea of the bushels and where the price will be. So, like I say, but we will see the prevent plant acres come out of the corn more so, and then maybe not be planted to beans. So we won't see as many acres of beans planted as could have been if it weren't for the pre-plant option.
Anything else before I let you go?
That's about it for today.
Hey, man, thank you.
Look at those big numbers at 3 o'clock.
We'll have them out. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, after the Senate last week approved a bipartisan deal, which President Donald Trump supported, to provide $19.1 billion in aid to disaster-struck communities, the legislation hit a snag Friday when freshman Representative Republican from Texas, Chip Roy, objected to House leaders' attempts to pass the bill by unanimous consent. But the measure could still sneak through the chamber today, even with members out of town for recess. The House should gavel in for a pro forma session, giving leadership a second chance to pass the bill, as long as none of the members who stuck around D.C. object. If not today, the House is likely to pass the disaster aid package when Congress reconvenes next week. The final legislation would provide $3 billion in aid to agriculture and lift a $900,000 income limit for certain farmers seeking trade relief payments from USDA. As I look down, this late-breaking news on that story, another House Republican thwarted attempts to pass that bipartisan disaster aid package. Representative Thomas Massie, a Republican of Kentucky who objected to the bill's passage during a voice vote, demanded that the vote be held after the House returns from recess next week. Let's stay with policies. President Donald Trump says the summertime ban on higher ethanol blends is a, quote, ridiculous rule. However, SPGlobal.com said during a press conference last Thursday that he didn't give any new timeline for giving consumer year-round access to E15. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, says it will issue a final rule allowing summertime E15 sales by June 1. The official start of the U.S. summer driving season. Mr. Trump says ethanol remains a vital part of America's energy future. Last October, the president promised his administration would approve year-round E15 access, but the policy got bogged down thanks to the government shutdown and the debate between biofuels producers and oil refiners. The EPA did propose a year-round E15 rule in March, a process that typically takes several months to finish. Market experts say that gas station owners are likely waiting until the final rule is official before they add any new pumping equipment. The Renewable Fuels Association says hundreds of fuel stations would add equipment to pump E15 in the months after the EPA adopts the final rule. They also believe that number will grow to thousands in the years after the decision is reached. And finally today, let's stay with biofuels, where bipartisan RFS Integrity Act is aimed at small refinery exemptions. The National Biodiesel Board has thanked multiple leaders from both political parties for introducing the Renewable Fuels Standard Integrity Act of 2019 into the House. The legislation would require small refiners to petition for renewable fuel standard hardship exemptions by June 1st of each year. That change would ensure the EPA properly accounts for exempted gallons in the annual renewable volume obligations it sets each November. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Farmers are a bit confused at this point about their prevented plant decision as it relates to the MFP program announced by the United States Department of Agriculture. USDA says, don't let this impact your decision, though that MFP program is tied to the 2019 acreage. Should they let it impact their decision?
So the way, and all we have is a press release to go on right now. So the way the press release is worded is that there will be a per acre payment on planted acres. So they'll calculate for each county a MFP payment. It won't vary for farms in a county. It will be a per acre payment, and it does not matter what you plant. So if you plant all corn, all soybeans, you would get the same MFP payment. So in that sense, it shouldn't matter what you plant on those acres. But if you look at the wording there, it specifically says planted acres and not prevented planted acres. So it will potentially influence the prevented planting decision. If that payment happens to be, say, $50 an acre, it would cause returns to planting either corn or soybeans to increase by $50. So that would give an incentive to plant versus taking the prevented planting payment.
And consequently, you need to compare that, I suppose, to what you're prevented planted.
Yeah, so you would, and again, we probably won't have the details of what that payment rate per acre will look like, but yes, you should include, you calculate what your prevented planting payment is, you calculate what you expect to receive from planting corn, and add $50 or so to it for the MFP payment. And again, I don't know what that MFP...
Again, that's a total guess. We have no idea what that payment's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, the $50 sort of comes from, you got last year and divided out across the acres, so that there was more money this year, but who knows what it's going to be.
All right. So let's just say we go by what Secretary Perdue says. Make your decision based off of conditions in the field. Don't count MFP. What do you do, and does it vary by region across the United States?
Well, so you're still, what the $50 will do will, so it gives you the incentive to $50 more or whatever it is, incentive to plant versus taking the prevented planting payment. And yeah, you should consider that. So if you're close,
I just told you not to, but that's okay.
If you're close, if the decision is close, you would, that program payment would give you the incentive to plant more. So yeah, you should consider it. Obviously, it's part of the payments that you'll get this year. One of the things that this also does to bring into play is that you can plant corn, wait through the late planting period, and then plant soybeans. So let me give you an example. June 5th in this state is when the final plant date for corn. So you could take a prevented planting payment after that date. If you wait 20 days, which would put it June 26 or so, you could plant soybeans. Your prevented planted payment would be reduced to 35%. You could plant soybeans, and I would presume that those planted soybeans would count as a planted acre.
Do you have to tell FSA about both?
You would be reporting both, but you did plant acre soybeans. You took a 35% prevented planting payment.
No, so. I bet FSA would be thinking about that in a different way after prevent plant, don't you think?
Well, you still planted an acre of soybeans.
I suppose so. Yeah. That's something to come yet, but yeah. It could be in play.
Yeah, so that brings that option in play. But in any case, it will cause planting to be more preferred to not planting, or add a preference in that direction. I still think you better look hard at that prevented planting payment, and just because that's a known number, you might be messing with your APH and go from there.
The known knowns and the unknown knowns. We've heard that before somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so get back to it then. You could put out a spreadsheet last week, and it shows, roughly speaking, a whole series of things. We've talked about this at least a little bit on the air, and certainly in our Commodity Week feed and on the website, about how to use it Can you run us through that and what it says?
So without an MFP payment, in the table that we put out, and we have a tool that you can use to look at it, and we're adding a MFP payment to this tool as we speak. But if you look at most APHs and a 30 bushel yield decline for late planting from your APH, that it says that you have to have, if you still have all the cost incur in putting in the crop, you have to have a corn price somewhere above $4, and often substantially so, to make planting corn to be equivalent to taking the preventive planting payment. So and that actually goes, those break evens go up the lower the APH. So if you have 160 bushel AP, trend adjusted APH, for example, you need closer to $5 to make corn planting look comparable to a preventive planting payment if you have an 80-85% coverage level. Well, the MFP payment would lower those break-even prices, and you know, how much it lowers it is a good question.
Well, you could figure it, I suppose, on your 50 bucks.
$50. Take your $50. Take your what you're expecting
yield is.
$50 divided by 200 bushels is
25 cents.
25 cents. It lowers the break even by 25 cents.
So you could follow the directions on that spreadsheet, which is up on farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's also on the willag.org website, at least it should be, in my Twitter account, and there are directions there for using it, because it takes a little bit to get used to it, but it's really just a four-step process, and it's all about pointing at the spreadsheet. So, and the number shows up under your finger, and it says, if cash price, and its cash price is $4.41, and I don't remember, it's 441 or 461 at 228 APH, and you have 85% coverage, then you need $4.41 cash to continue to plant and be better than you would if you were to have taken prevent plant. And you can take 25 cents off that, or whatever you decide the number is.
Yep.
Simple enough, Gary.
Yep.
What else do we need to know here? Anything?
We'll see what the market reacts to all of this. And again, it's hard for the market to react to something that they can't see, but we're here where we're here.
Hey, one other item. Can we talk a little bit about SEO? Because a lot of folks will have taken that. I don't think it will, if you use Prevent Plant, it won't be in play, but how does that work when you look out, because in this year, because I think it's not until I went back and listened to your YouTube from March the 12th that's up on the Farm Talk Daily website about how to calculate this. And we won't know until March of next year, right? Because we don't have the county yields until then.
Yeah, so this year you're going to be looking at, so the SCO, by the way, we don't believe that there will be, you have to plant the acres to get SCO. And if you plant the acres, then this year, if you declare by July 15th that you're going to go into ARC, you won't have the SCO premium charged to you. It's hard to make, so by that date, we can sort of make a determination of whether we'll have a payment or not. And that's going to be hard this year because you're probably having lower yields, right? So that will increase the chance of payment. And then we'll have to see what the price is doing at that point in time.
Yeah, thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Tuesday afternoon, let's take a look at the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. We think the weather's unique here, but boy, you have had just some, well, let's call it irrational things going on. What's been happening there in your part of the world?
Well, a lot of what's been happening here is what's ending up going into the Midwest and Corn Belt. And we all know how that's been, how stormy and wet it's been. But it has been unusually cold in the western half of the United States, from California through the Rockies into the Dakotas and Nebraska. There has just been a relentless stormy pattern over the last 2 weeks, and nothing has been left off the table. There has been tornadoes, there have been hail, there's been thunderstorms, there's been heavy snow, and today is a situation where throughout the West we've got rain, snow, hail, flooding, and a whole bunch of things going on.
Did I see something like 5 inches of hailstones that had to be moved off the interstate?
Yeah, Interstate 25 north of Cheyenne, snowplows had to be put out for a large swath of the road that was under 6 inches of hail. And that was a day where there was golf ball, tennis ball, and softball-sized hail with some of those storms.
Oh, my gosh. Just unbelievable. And then just as unbelievable as the amount of rainfall we've had over the last 12 to 13 months, it keeps coming. Farmers need to get into the field. They're desperate to do it now. And it doesn't look like this week or next week are going to be any better in the Midwest. Can you tell me about those factors?
Yeah, there's a little bit of bad news and some good news in what we can talk about. Certainly the bad news is that for the next week, this ring of moisture that's been going around the big hot high in the southeast United States and wedged in between the cold and the west has been this arch of very rainy weather that's been disfocused in the middle part of the country. Now, that pattern is going to be stubborn, so it's going to go on here for another week or so. Now, what we are seeing in our long-range charts is a bit of an easing of this pattern, as there should be as we get deeper into and closer to the month of June and into that second week of June. We see a pattern that does look warmer. May not necessarily go into a completely dry weather pattern, but we see a light at the end of the tunnel, Todd. It's not a train this time around, but it's going to be another week or 10 days before we're out of it.
Somebody's got a candle down there. Holy smokers. Okay. Hey, thank you so much. Anything else that we need to add in before I let you go for the day?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the only thing is the huge contrast. I mean, all the heat and dryness in the southeast and then the exact opposite not far away and in the middle is right where you guys have been. So it's just been relentless.
You know, I have not talked about that, but the southeast is really beginning to suffer as well, but it's on the opposite side of what we've had, right?
Exactly. And what I think will happen is once that pattern breaks here in a week to 10 days, the southeast will get some rains and everything else. So hopefully, but we're not there yet.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.